welcome to another episode of What Matters in North Carolina. As always, I'm your host, Matt Calder, and we have a great show for you today. Today, we will be speaking with Ray Notestein, who is the newest addition to the Civitas Institute offices here in Raleigh. He is an editor and is joining the Civitas Institute as gatekeeper and guardian of all the content to come out of the Civitas Institute that is written down, typed out, somehow put to letter and page. He will be looking at all that content. And we're going to talk to Ray about his background, where he came from, how he ended up at the Civitas Institute, and where he is hoping to take the Civitas Institute's writing and content and go with it from now on. Ray has a very interesting background. He grew up as a military brat, and he moved around a lot, has seen a lot of the country and the world, and has a lot of interesting stories, as you will see coming up soon. But before we get that, I want to talk about subscribing to the show. If you're not subscribing to the show, you are missing out on the easiest way to get the show to your device. Whether you're an Apple user or an Android user, you can use Apple Podcasts or you can use Podcast Addict or some any other app on the Android system, that the many, many free podcasting apps on there to subscribe to the show and get it to your device. If you're going to the website to look up the show, you're missing out on the easiest way to get the show to your device. Or if you're one of our listeners on the airwaves, every week on FM radio stations around the state, then you can get the show to your devices in the most technologically advanced way, as opposed to sitting down every time and catching the show at the right time, wherever you're hearing it, whether you're one of our Saturday morning listeners, one of our Sunday listeners. You can get the show as soon as it comes out to you on your device to listen at your leisure. And to do that, go search What Matters in North Carolina, where you listen to those shows. You can do it on your computer, your phone, your tablet, whatever. Also, follow along with us on social media, on Facebook and Twitter. We're on there at What Matters NC on Facebook and Twitter. Like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, and you'll be able to catch all of our new content that comes out there. Engage with us, and we want to hear from you there. But we also want to literally hear from you as well. And to do that, you can use our new call-in line where you can leave messages for us. A minute or two, keep it clean, concise messages about what you want us to talk about, things we have talked about, or if you kind of just want to rant, and maybe we can use it as a touching point for a segment on the show. But to do that, call 919-747-8063. Again, that's 919-747-8063. And we will check out those messages, and if they're good, we'll play them on the air. But without any further ado, let's talk with Ray Notestein. Ray, thanks for coming on the show for your inaugural segment on the show. Now that you're joining Civitas, we caught you in your first week on the show. How are things going?
Things are going really well. Happy to be here, Matt. Happy to be here at Civitas. So I'm looking forward to helping out in a lot of areas.
So you're the Civitas editor. You're the guy that everything has to go through before it comes out now, right?
That's right. I try to think of myself as the guardian of our content and our mission. And in terms of that, just you're right. I'm looking at all the aspects of the written word here and helping out in terms of defining our message and offering a real prudent tone and timing to the conservative message.
All right. Well, I believe that anyone who is in writing long enough or is an editor, it has an opinion to this next question I'm going to ask you. What is your opinion on the semicolon?
My opinion on the semicolon is sometimes it's overused, but oftentimes a lot of people don't know when to actually use a semicolon. So it's just one of those things, I think, that instead of just maybe learning the rule, it does come with a little bit of practice. So it's something that should be utilized, but it can be overused more often than not.
Yes, not often used, but often abused, right?
Right. That's a good way of putting it.
And then follow-up question then is, what about the Oxford comma?
I'm a big fan of the Oxford comma. I know.
Yes.
Yes. It's not always used in AP style, which is the most popular format. And I think Civitas uses it, but I'm a big fan of the Oxford comma because it makes sense. And that's how you speak. So why wouldn't you use an Oxford comma?
Exactly. And it removes ambiguity. It really does. There are situations where
I agree.
An Oxford comma totally removes something that could be ambiguous that you think should be obvious, but for a lot of people isn't. I'm right there with you. I'm a huge fan of the Oxford comma.
Yeah, and if you're reading, it just makes sense to have it in there because that's how you read and that's how you enunciate and pronounce things and sort of read it out.
Oh, yeah. So I guess we'll move past the language nerd questions, and we'll kind of get to your background a little bit. So Tell me a little about, and tell me and the viewers, the listeners, a little bit about where you came from, how you got here.
Sure.
Just take it away.
My dad was an Air Force pilot, so I grew up all around this country, and it was kind of a cool thing to be on some of these Air Force bases, and we'd see things like the B-1 bomber come in, or the B-2 bomber, FB-111s at Pease Air Force Base, which is now closed in New Hampshire. My dad flew the KC-135. So I had a very, I think, unique experience around seeing this nation towards the end of the Cold War. I think that had a prominent role in sort of my foundational thinking about American values, American democracy. Why is that important? Why is that important to preserving? Because, I mean, I had a dad who would sit alert for sometimes weeks in an underground bunker in case this country faced a nuclear attack from the former Soviet Union. So that had a foundational sort of just shaping of me in some ways. And we moved around a lot. I lived in places like Hawaii, Egypt, lived in New Hampshire, Michigan, of course, Kentucky, and lived in Mississippi for a long time. Went to college at Ole Miss. Always had been always had a fascination with politics, followed it real closely. I can remember the Ronald Reagan presidency, so that had another deep impact upon my life and sort of shaping some of my thoughts. It's something I can visibly remember to this day very well. And so when I went to college, I worked for a congressman for a year, but felt a call to ministry my last year of college, and went to seminary at Asbury Theological Seminary, graduated there. That's in central Kentucky, real pretty place amidst Hortz Farms, about 20 miles south of Lexington. And that also had a foundational impact on my thinking, because I didn't think of things so much in a political way as I did before, but really in even a deeper foundational level, started thinking about sort of the purpose and meaning of life and creation and how that all plays into not just culture, but I think our lives in general. So it really instituted me into being a deeper thinker. And when I was in seminary, I started getting involved in writing. Did ministry for a real little bit, but really got involved in writing and would cover denominational issues for an organization called the Institute on Religion and Democracy. So I started writing a lot about politics and theology and where that merged. And that led me into a job at the Acton Institute for the Study of Religion and Liberty, which just synthesizes theology and free markets. And I was an editor up there for 7.5 years, did a lot of writing, research, managed some publications. A little bit of teaching. And so that helped me just sort of understand conservatism and sort of repelling against the what I would call ideologies of materialism. I got married, and my wife and I wanted to move down south, and we ended up in North Carolina, and it's been great here. So worked a while doing editorial stuff with the North State Journal. And I'm happy to be here at Civitas and looking forward to it.
So there's definitely a lot to unpack there. It's a good information dump on where you've been, where you came from, and how you got here. So starting at the beginning, you mentioned that your dad was in the Air Force, career in the Air Force as a pilot, which is funny enough that he piloted the KC-135s, because my brother-in-law works down at Seymour Johnson on the 135s, okay, refuelers. Yeah. And I used to live in Goldsboro and see him overhead all the time. But you must have, it sounds like you've been around the country a lot, starting off, and you've been in the northern part of the country. Yep. You've been down here, you've been further south. I mean, where else have you lived in the country?
Sure. I was born in Okinawa, so I've been all over the world, really. I mean, I've traveled through Europe and Africa and different places. But in the country, I mean, I lived in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Lived in Oscoda, Michigan. When I worked at Acton, I lived in Grand Rapids. Lived in New Hampshire. Lived in Maine for a year. Lived in Mississippi for a long time. Lived in Kentucky. And really, I think Mississippi was a foundational shaping. I lived there probably the longest for one period. And that's why, you know, in many ways, my mom's from Tennessee, my dad's from Michigan, but I consider myself in many ways culturally Southern. Mississippi had a very deep influence, and going to Ole Miss, I think, had a deep influence where, you know, at first I wasn't so sure, and then embraced many cultural sort of phenomenon and values of the Deep South. So that did have a profound effect on me. And I think, but I do have a very eclectic background, and I can fit in many different areas, but certainly feel more culturally at home in the South.
Well, it's a good thing you're back here then, because I mean, you've kind of planted your roots in this area now, it seems like, and kind of, I guess, getting involved in you know, the politics of the state through the Civitas Institute. You're really kind of inserting yourself, it seems like, into this area for a while, at least.
Yeah, I think that's right. I love North Carolina, just because it is a very diverse state. I mean, you have the beach, you have the mountains, two things most people enjoy. I enjoy, too. So I really love bluegrass music, too. So, I mean, there's a lot of that in North Carolina. So that's been a cool thing for me, because when I lived in Kentucky, I used to go to a lot of festivals. So moving to North Carolina was exciting because I got to get back into that sort of festival circuit and go see a lot of these great traditional bluegrass bands that I love.
Well, good deal. You'll definitely have the opportunity, like you said. But so you went into, you touched on your personal political beliefs and leanings. And, of course, the Civitas Institute being a conservative, you know, institute, lowering taxes and all sorts of things and reform and getting rid of government overregulation and that sort of thing. But where do you, like, what are your kind of your high points of your personal policy belief? You said you're a you know, followed politics for a long time, but what kind of gets you interested? You know, we talk with other people in the office all the time, and yep. People know that Bob Libke education gets him going, and we've talked with Susan Myrick about elections policy stuff. Mm-hmm. What really gets you going?
That's a good question, Matt. I think for myself, I really try to look at foundational issues. So I'm really passionate about issues like religious liberty, religious conscience, because I do have a seminary background and studied theology in depth. I mean, I've always felt that was an important issue, even more so now. So I would say religious liberty, but just foundational issues to begin with, instead of just being partisan for the sake of being partisan, really looking at foundational issues and understanding why are you shaped by these beliefs and why is it important to not just study the history of the country, but sort of the foundational aspects of how some of these ideas came about. So I'm very passionate about Second Amendment, Bill of Rights issues in general, but the Second Amendment is something I'm very passionate about. Any sort of attack on the right to carry on, the right to bear arms, always strikes a passion within me. One thing I'm also really, really passionate about too is education, sort of looking at a deeper level of what is the purpose of education, why do we need to be educated, and not so much just talking about the minutia of some of the policy, but going to just a little deeper level on some of those issues. And I'm always passionate too about market economy and the importance of not being restrained anymore by government regulation, and being able to pursue the freedom, because we're all created for a purpose, to flourish and to live a virtuous life. And we do that best when we're not, you know, being interfered with by an intrusive centralized government. So those are just a few issues I'm very passionate about.
Well, it's definitely you'll find a lot of common ground in this office, but it's nice to hear you talking about the Second Amendment, because up until now I have been the gun guy in the office. I've around Civitas and, you know, Freedom Action Network here in the office, I've been the gun guy. Any gun call gets kicked over to my line, and if I had a quarter for everybody who had was a felon who wanted to know if they could have a firearm, I would probably be able to buy another gun with that money. But so are you a shooter? Are you a hunter, a carrier?
Yeah, I haven't actually done much hunting, but I do like to shoot, certainly for target, have some firearms. And I like sort of the old antique guns. I've got some World War II era stuff, and I like some of the old Winchester lever action rifles, old cowboy guns, as some people call them. Are just firearms that I love.
Handgun calibers or 30-30 or
yeah, 30-30. Handgun calibers, 38,
I've always thought 3v7 would be a fun lever gun to have. A revolver lever gun at the same caliber would always be, I always thought it'd be nice.
Yeah. And I think sort of just on the firearm issue, it's important for people to ask, you know, if government doesn't trust you with your rights that are enshrined in our Bill of Rights, then, you know, the whole aspect of government and liberty is protect the individual rights of citizens against intrusion from the state. So the whole purpose of government was set up to protect our rights. So that's important, I think, for people to understand today. And I think, you know, a lot of us do understand that, but there's some people that don't, that understand the whole purpose of government is instituted, at least in terms of what the founders thought, was to protect the rights that were enshrined in our Bill of Rights.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And going back to, you said the World War II, is that some Milsurp rifles or that sort of thing?
M1 Garand carbines are things that I really like. I mean, I have some Mausers, which are kind of a neat gun.
The Mauser's interesting, depending on where is it, you know, if it's a Chinese Mauser, or, depending on where, right. Where the Mauser, there's some differences between them. They're pretty interesting.
There's some differences, and honestly haven't shot it a lot because it, you know, it looks a little scary to shoot sometimes because it's big. And but, you know, I think some of my favorite guns from the World War II era are probably like the M1 Garand and M1 Carbine. Those are just classic American firearms. And one firearm I don't have would be an M14. That would be something.
I would like to have one of the M14s.
I would like to have one of those.
I have the Mini 14.
Yes, I've seen that. The Ruger Ranch rifle.
Yeah, I've wanted to get one of those just because of its proximity to the M14, to the action and that sort of thing.
It has that similar look and feel. I actually have not. Mm-hmm. I've fired a lot of those AR-15 type weapons. Don't own any, but just because they don't look physically, you know, sort of aesthetically appealing to me.
See, I'm the other way. I like the ARs. I mean, I've built a couple of them. I like them. They're fun guns to shoot,
okay,
for sure.
Cool. Well, maybe you'll build one for me. Well,
there we go. But the there's some work involved there, but not too much. It's I think of it more like Legos than actually doing much machining or any at all, really.
Right.
But they are a fun thing to have, and they're fun for, like, my wife to shoot that, as opposed to shooting a M1 Garand, which I would never try to put her behind because she wouldn't want to shoot anything else after that.
Yeah, it kind of pounds on your shoulder a little bit.
Oh, yeah. And whereas with the buffer spring, the AR, I mean, it's nothing. But anyway, so moving beyond gun talk, I'm sure we'll have plenty of time to dig down more into that. You talked about the freedom aspect, freedom of religion, freedom, mm-hmm. you know, protect the freedom to exercise the rights that we have and have been recognized in the, you know, Bill of Rights and all, you know, all of the rights that we have as Americans. So you want to expound a little more on what really kind of the high points that you think are the more important things. I mean, I would guess with a media background, freedom of speech is up there, you know, freedom of the press, and then your seminary background, freedom of religion. But do you want to kind of expand a little there?
Yeah, I think it's just sort of, I think one of the problems we have in our nation today is the rise of just secularism. And I'm not just criticizing secularism to just criticize it, but one thing it does is it sort of muddles to a degree what our rights are. If we don't have a sort of God-given understanding of rights, right, our whole idea and concept of rights precede government. They go above government. Government is only there to protect and enshrine the rights that we do have, ultimately. I mean, government can do other things, but, I mean, its ultimate purpose and mission is to protect the rights of Americans. And so when we don't understand that there's actually a higher law and that there's a higher rule than government, then we become slaves to government, so to speak, right? I mean, then we look to the government more and more to solve our problems, to be sort of this sort of savior complex in our life. And so I think it's just important from a very foundational level, whether we're looking at the Bill of Rights or the rights that we do have, is to understand that there is a power higher than the government. And that when we recognize that, then we have a ability, I think, to a much greater degree to flourish as a nation and to not sort of be trampled by the centralization by power. And that's one of the problems with secularism, is that it really feeds into this idea that government's the greatest power and government can solve our problems.
Right. And that was the I like the way you bring that out with how, you know, we have these rights, and they're not government given rights. And you know, when I ask the question, say, you know, I'd say the rights that are recognized in our foundational documents.
Yep.
And I mean, you're right there in that same belief that we have a right to free speech. We have a right to bear arms. We have, you know, our rights are things that exist. They exist regardless of a piece of paper saying right. they exist.
It transcends government. Yeah. And I think that's important for us to really focus on and understand as conservatives. I mean, if you're a conservative, you have to understand that the government, you know, we give the power to the government, right? I mean, that's the whole purpose of our republic. We don't grant rights. The government doesn't grant rights upon us. The government can take away our rights, whether, you know, illegally, so to speak. But we're the people that grant the rights to the government. I mean, that's the whole foundation in many ways of conservatism, is we grant rights to the government. We give government certain aspects that we allow them to have. But government doesn't give us things. Government doesn't bestow on us any rights. It can't, ultimately. So, you know, as conservatives, that's something we always have to be aware of, whether in our writing or whatever mission that we're taking on.
Oh, yeah, and I think a lot of people definitely forget that. In today's society, where we're learning less and less and less about history than ever before, I think a lot of people forget that the rights are there, and using what you're saying, those rights are there from a higher power, from God.
Right. And, yeah, absolutely right.
But I mean, thanks for coming on the show. We gotta unfortunately get out of here for this segment. But I mean, I think we just kind of definitely laid down a groundwork of things that we'll be able to bring you back on and talk about.
Yeah, I'd love to be on as much as you'll have me, Matt. And thank you for what you do.
All right, thank you. Thank you to Ray for coming on the show. Thank you to you, the listeners out there, whether you're on the airways, whether you're listening on a device, on your computer, on the website. If you've already subscribed to the podcast, great. If you haven't, go ahead and go do that. If you want to find out how to subscribe to the podcast, check out the beginning of the show again. Or if you're out there on the airwaves, I'll give it to you one more time. Search What Matters in North Carolina wherever you listen to podcasts, and you will not have to catch it on the air at the appropriate time on Saturday or Sunday or what have you. You'll be able to catch it whenever you want to at your leisure. And we'll talk to you next time.